Good morning, citizen lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Good. I heard the bell go off. It must be time for another installment of Citizen Lobbyist.
I believe that is correct. I think we're ready. Where do you want to start this morning?
Well, there's just so much to talk about with that City of Palmer council meeting that I was monitoring from our live feed, that let's start there.
Okay, let's do that. Go for it.
It was Tuesday. I had a full council. All council members were there, along with the attorney, Mike Gaddy, and the clerk, and the manager, Nate Wallace. And so I kind of got tuned in a little bit late, Mike. They had a couple of ordinances ahead of time. It was approval of the agenda. It was just an introduction for a new official zoning district map, which is going to be kind of interesting when that comes, which will probably be next meeting. And also there was an ordinance on their action memorandum letting the manager negotiate and execute a replacement agricultural lease for land, about 5 acres of land, of airport land, to a subdivision.
Right. Well, all of that is around what has been a long-standing question on developing understanding, I may put it that way, of what it means to have a fairly large, a major installation like the Palmer Airport within the city limits, and what that means in terms of, yes, there's the runway, there's the taxiways, but then there's a shadow from that facility that covers approaches and so on, with all kinds of regulations for safety purposes, appropriately, and it constrains what you can do with all of that.
Ah, so they're changing. Looks like they're adapting some land into that.
Right, and anytime, and back a while ago, when the Nutrition Center was being built, next to the Job Corps for the school district, there was perhaps not quite a full appreciation of what it meant to have that airport there, and so there was some exchange of properties. It's another layer because of the concerns given that you have an airport there. So this is what I think is happening now. Due diligence is prevailing. People have learned a bit about just what needs to be done whenever you're going to do something like this. So it's not a simple matter of saying, okay, here, we're going to do this to that. And then you have that other aspect of the transition of ag land into subdivisions, which has been of some concern to people over in many different ways. So as Palmer grows, those discussions will be ongoing, certainly at the city council level.
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of discussion about the rich soils over there and sacrificing them for housing. So, yeah, we'll be following that. And also looking again at these zoning maps that come out, prior in the next couple of meetings. Those should be interesting. The first presentation was, I started a little late, but it really sounded pretty interesting, that Julie Estey from MEA was giving about their rate increases.
Right.
He was giving a pretty good explanation about that.
And I think the what came across to me listening to her, because she is good. She said, I'm going to go through this. It's complicated. It is a whole series of calculations that are built upon forces that act upon the monopoly utility providing power. That come on down from everywhere. And as a result, I think what she was clearly able to point out, that the MEA just doesn't sit there and the board says, oh, let's see, figure out how much we can charge, and we'll do that. But they have to make their adjustments in response to guidelines that are provided from the state level. I think she did a good job, but even having gone through it, walked through it, it would be difficult for me to summarize and say, oh, here it is. The big divide is, of course, the other realistic factor of a heavy user of power and the individual, say, house user of power. And the reasons why there might be some differences associated with costs there. But I think she said, okay, we'll walk through this. And more importantly, we are willing to answer any further questions if you have it from the council or people. And I think that's the thing to pass on, that if people are wondering why their bill is the way it is, contact MEA, and they will be happy to go through it very specifically and explain.
Yeah, or listen to the podcast to this, because I think if you actually concentrated on what she was saying, I think it did make sense. A couple of things that stuck out to me on that, and she sort of summed it up when the attorney asked her what the average increase was, and she basically talked about it being just a few dollars per user. So, again, go back and listen to the tape. But a couple of things I thought stuck out to me, her comments about the damages to power poles were really high last year. A lot of people hit power poles, and they do charge those back. But it also is the highest uncollected account that they have.
All right.
Which means that, again, they have to replace, has to be spread out among all users if they aren't able to collect that. And there was some discussion about overhead lines as opposed to underground lines.
Right.
And she pointed out that the city of Eagle River charges customers just a few pennies more so that when they put in new power lines, they're able to put them underground. And they are twice as expensive to put in, and they last half as long.
And I thought,
I didn't know.
I thought that there was a great question from the council about, why wouldn't you still go ahead and do that? And I think the piece of an answer that she gave that was so powerful was to point out that, it's really a lot easier to find a problem in an overhead line and repair it than even locate and then dig down in the middle of winter and make a repair on an underground line.
Yeah, I would just point out that the technology and I have a power guy. My husband's a power guy, so I did quiz him a little bit about this, and he said that, that was very true. But, the technology is changing on that all the time, and so finding that is getting easier and easier. But they still have to dig. But, again, we go back to the question, renewables, really easy to adjust solar as there is to dig up these lines or wind or something else that Palmer really hasn't gotten involved in much. So there's that. Next, they had an interesting presentation, and I bet it was a visual one because it sounds like he had a pride show or PowerPoint of the presentation from the Palmer golf course.
Right.
George Palmer, who runs that. And he had some interesting things to show in that. It's been open 12 years now. I guess I didn't know that. It opened April 13th, and which was pretty early, but not extremely early. It's opened in 2015 in March 25th or 21st. So it's, it got opened early. He did acknowledge the fact that we had a pretty miserable summer and that totally did impact them as far as what their revenues were there. He said he thought that it was, both the weather and a little bit of the economy that didn't have such a robust season out there. But he did point out to some big tournaments that they're having and a couple that they have in the hopper, and also some comments about the age of the golf carts. And they're way beyond their life. Most have outlived their life expectancy, and they need to be thinking about getting 10 more new ones in the future. And those aren't cheap. They're kind of like snow machines. They're kind of expensive. But they need to address that. So Brad Hansen told him that to bring those capital requests in, that they take a look at them. They're getting ready to do budget. So it was a good presentation, I thought.
Right. Being there, the visuals were startling because they were great pictures of what the course looks like over the years, starting with maybe a bit of flooding early on in the season and rolling on through. It's a beautiful course, obviously, but he did a good job of pointing out the other important thing, that relative to other courses, the Palmer course is doing very well. It seems to be a fairly efficient course. People are still playing and interested, and there's a lot of pressure on other courses in other places. So that came up.
I think the fees are lower here too, which certainly has some advantage.
Right.
Then they went on to the mayor's report and the attorney's report and the clerk report, and there really wasn't too much to report on that. The clerk did say that she attended the Anchorage Alaska Municipal League conference with all the clerks, which they were all coalescing a week or so ago in Anchorage, and she learned all kinds of how important it was to do that. And I know there's been some talk by the council now and again how important it is to be part of Alaska Municipal League, and I think this is a good pointer out that not only did a new council members get to go to Alaska Municipal League to get some pointers on being a council person, but also the planners go, as do the clerks. So that was good to hear from her. They do have a new assistant clerk starting the position December 4th, and she's very happy about that.
Right.
And she gave them a handout of attendance for the commissions, who goes to the commission meetings that they're appointed to and who doesn't. I think this Palmer may be the only, I can't speak for Wasilla, but I know the borough doesn't keep on top of that. And I think it's good that she gives that report to them, lets them know, who's attending the meetings and who's just getting appointed and not doing the work. So that was pretty great. Nothing really. Only one sort of non-coincidental audience participation member. It didn't sound like there were a lot of people there. Mike, you were there. I wasn't. So
mostly staff. There were a couple of people from the community, citizens that were there, but they chose not to speak.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think the piece, the ordinance that got a lot of discussion was once again about removing some language, and this had to do with refuse containers.
Oh, my gosh. Who knew you could talk about dumpsters that long?
It was a lengthy discussion, and I haven't clearly in my mind the history of why this was brought up, but it appeared, for the listeners who may have missed this, as a way of cleaning up a phrase that said very simply that if you were going to have a refuse container on a parking lot, you needed to screen it. And the problem with it is that there wasn't very much more than that. So in terms of detail of what this meant, did you have to build a full enclosure? Did it have to be solid? Could it be vegetation? What are we talking about here? And I think the administration was saying, well, we would like to remove this because we don't have, with this instruction, enough guidance to really do the job of somebody putting up a new parking lot and they're going to have some kind of refuse container. And it was pointed out, although there's a lot of discussion about dumpster versus smaller containers, that's not what it said. It said refuse container, and therefore it could apply to anything.
So I heard it a little bit differently, just in that, first of all, we should say that Palmer does have an ordinance that says that you will have your trash picked up, regardless of whether it's a dumpster or a trash barrel. When you move into the city of Palmer, you get trash service, you pay for it, and
sure.
That's just the way we roll. Now, this was really about, but what it doesn't say, and I think the manager pointed this out, what you can have on your property. Do you want, they don't say if you're a business of this size, you should have this capacity for trash. If you want, they don't force you to have a dumpster. Some businesses have it. Some businesses don't, smaller businesses, just have trash cans. But so there's that, but it sounded to me like there's two businesses going into Anchorage right now. One was a medical center, and I've escaped me who the other one was, that are struggling with the language that talks about the placement of where these dumpsters are supposed to be
Right.
How they and how Genesee's, I think, as it's going up,
right.
New Ottensville, how the wall that needs to be erected and what it was for originally. And I haven't read the original ordinance, and it sounds like it's maybe sitting in the building building code part of
right.
the charter. Which maybe it's not even in the right spot. It needs to be somewhere else, so that needs to be addressed. But it was in an effort, and this is what Mr. Hansen said, and he should know, he's been on there 20 years, and it's dated during his time, that it came in as when they were forming the downtown district and redevelopment was taking place, they were worried about taking up valuable parking space with dumpsters. And he did make this point, and I think it was his quote that said, "We can't make everywhere in Palmer look nice," which I guess I question a little bit, but he thought, you know, that's when it came up. So there was some genesis of why it was there. So it was just kind of unwieldy the way it was worded and also where it sat in their code book. I guess they sort of brushed off at the end of the day what Mr. LaFrance was saying, of what he understood that maybe it needed some tweaking, maybe they need to address it, but he wasn't comfortable removing it and having no ordinance while they sent it back to the Planning and Zoning Commission or did whatever they were to put another one. He thought a better procedure was to leave it in place, because the only damage it was doing at this point was these two businesses were struggling to conform to it, have them have it rewritten, and then make it take it out and put the new ordinance in at that time.
Right.
So that made a lot of sense to me. He didn't get a lot of love from the
rest
of the council.
No, he was the lonely vote, as I remember. Everybody else said, "No, let's take it away." And then when asked, I think it was kind of a blurry instruction to how to proceed somewhere down the road to do something more. But it wasn't I didn't hear it as a clear, "Yes, we really want you to hop on this and make sure we have something better back soon."
Well, and I guess the other thing is they had a little bit of a conversation. The attorney asked him, what is the point? Because there's some idea, where should it go in the code? Is the point sanitation, or is the point, public health and sanitation, or is it beautification? You have to decide what that is. Mr. Hansen was very fixated on access to them so that those picking up the dumpsters have access. But, you know, here we go, Mike, again, about, we're not the only small city that has dumpsters, and it seems like there would be time before you put this on the agenda from staff's point to show them some examples of other communities that have like and what might be a better substitute without, you know, taking this off while you figure that out. I'm a little concerned about their process.
Right. Well, I had time because I was sitting in the back while the discussion was going on. And I went out on the internet and I checked. I put in screening dumpster ordinances.
Yeah,
and you probably found what I did. I found all kinds of things out there, but
I think we like to use the excuse a little too often around here about weather to not do things, not to put benches in, not to put signs in, not to put certain things because of snow removal, but. If you go and do the research in other communities that have very, very similar weather, Maine being one state, they don't have those challenges. So either we don't have the right equipment to do that, and are we always going to let what equipment we have drive how our city looks and the usage of it, or are we going to learn from other communities and how they're doing it better? And I sometimes think there's a lack of direction to do that.
Okay. Well,
that was an interesting one.
Yes, it was. And of course, then we also we were involved. The radio station was involved in a request for an amount of money to support a change in the way we were, or an extension of the way in which we provide citizen access to the meetings by providing a video stream and video recording that would be available, which would have a keyed to an agenda approach that allows you to say, okay, if you want to only listen to that discussion about the screening of dumpsters, you could click on the agenda and it would go directly to that video. That's a proposal that the radio station has made to do, and there was considerable discussion about that, but you were listening. What did you hear?
Certainly a lot of pushback by both Mr. Hansen in particular, and also I thought the mayor, about not wanting the videotaping of the council during their work at all. So no need for that. Seems rather offended to me that was going to happen, which just seems a little odd to me because, and I don't know if he's aware of it because I've not seen either of them at either school board meetings or at assembly meetings, but they're being videotaped right now, and I don't hear a lot of problems with that.
Right.
It makes it a much more enjoyable experience for somebody interested.
I happened to have a conversation with the mayor afterwards, and also I've had a number of conversations with city manager, and I think that because ultimately the vote was to provide some funds in support of this project from the city, and we're soliciting funds from other sources to put this together, and to do it in a slow fashion to demonstrate just how it works and what impact it has, and that it's perhaps different than what maybe people are thinking or imagining, that there's going to be a big camera sitting there focusing on them with lights, et cetera, et cetera. This isn't, it isn't that. It's more of a record, and it's pretty unobtrusive. So I think it will play out with on a small scale of some of the smaller meetings, and we'll see what the council wishes to do. They didn't. I think they raised some good questions. They were able to articulate their concerns. And I think as we move along and play with this, they will begin to see that there is an advantage to be gained, not only for the citizen aspect of being able to access the meetings, but also for the council itself.
Yeah, I think that part, totally, they didn't understand that part about being able to grab the portion of the agenda from the and the videotape together, what a saving time saver that is for somebody that wants to look something up. I mean, often we saw that right here in this meeting, saying, I don't even know where we came up with this dumpster ordinance, and had that been done, all of course that technology didn't exist during that time. But you know, oftentimes they refer to other meetings and what someone said or what the intent was of some piece of legislation. So to me, it's a huge tool for that. And as Councilwoman Combs pointed out, which was, I think, a very good point, is, you know, this is something that Radio Free Palmer uses in the community, too, for other functions that also affect the business that they're doing. And that's a great benefit. It is a community thing. So I hope at the end of the day they get some comfort level on it, because I think it'll be a great thing. And it really enhanced the experience for everybody staying up to date on what the council is doing. You know, I think, Mike, we're just at this this influx right now, how people get their information. And I know I'm somebody who's worked at home for a long time, and I participate in, you know, half a dozen to a dozen teleconferences or WebExes or something every week. I'm not sure that some of the people on that council are that versed on that, and how that this is sort of the way of the world, that people like they want to know, they want the benefit of getting the information, but they like the fact they don't have to go leave their own space to do it. So I think that's sort of part of the opportunity for education of the council as well.
Okay. Well, at least we're moving forward. They did vote to support it with a sum of money from a community council grant, and we're very appreciative of that. Go ahead.
And just real quickly, I want to remind people there is a big assembly meeting next Tuesday. I unfortunately will be out of town, But it looks like there's a couple of interesting things on there, including something they kicked down the road about reducing the use of plastic bags by imposing an excise tax.
No.
That comes back to them. And then, and also a motion that Member Sykes had made to direct the manager to facilitate a panel and on community meetings regarding crime. And so we'll see how that shakes out. So it looks like there's it's already online. The it's on there, so people can look up and see what's going to be on the agenda. But that is for next Tuesday. So
okay. Oh, great. We'll be there. We'll stream it. We'll record it.
Great. And I'll listen to it.
All right. Thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. Have a good day.
You too.